6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by the Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris at Lightforce, the tongue-tied, I don't know what, podcaster. Joined virtually, as always, by the wonderfully spoken Anna Forsyth at E4Say03.
Yeah, thanks to years of being in plays, I guess. That helped me with my diction, I guess. But no. You're probably, you know, the Pfizer flows through you. Is that correct?
It does. The Pfizer flows through me. It's kind of thrown me off the game. I mean, before we clicked record, I talked about how the side effect that I've been impacted by most is just I'm tired. It feels like it's kind of like when you got a flu or a cold or whatever, and you can tell your body is sort of tired because it's fighting. In this case, my body is not really fighting anything. It's just figuring things out. And
I'm okay with being
tired.
Yeah, exactly. Worth it in the end, but yeah, it does suck. I will say you've had picked probably a good weekend. I mean, the weather was glorious on Saturday, so you missed out on that, but it's been two days of being crap weather.
That's the thing, is it didn't really slow the weekend down completely. Like my daughter had her soccer practice on Saturday, so we went to that. We went to the park and like a picnic, and she got to play in the sun, fly a kite, ride her bike, and so I'm still
a kite. Wow.
Yeah, it was a nice breeze.
I didn't know people still did that, honestly. Feels very Victorian.
Baby Force is a big fan of flying kites. Like a friend of hers got one, and then since then she, you know, I think they must fly a kite in like Peppa Pig too or something. Like, she's seen others fly kites, and so she's decided she likes to. Nice. There was a plane flying a banner around Richmond. I couldn't quite read it, but
I saw it at the beach. We're at Jericho, and it took us a while to understand it. So this was another one of the banners that said Aquilini out, but it literally took us about, you know, 5 flybys to figure it out because the spacing was super weird. I think Aquilini is too long a word for them or something because.
Well, this, the banner that I saw in Richmond was longer than Aquilini out.
Oh, okay.
Like it was as if it was like close to a full sentence. Like we're talking like 7 or 8 words.
Okay, so, yeah, I definitely don't think it's meant for full sentences.
No, it's probably not meant for Aquilini out or whatever either. But, this episode is going to probably touch on that a little bit. There was a Canucks fan protest, huge, huge protest. I don't mean to make light of it, but there was a handful of people out to express their opinion because, hey, things happened since the end of the Vancouver Canucks season. And, you'll find next season may look a lot like this season did, at least from a personnel perspective. So we'll touch on that. The Stanley Cup playoffs are in full swing. And I don't know, we've got probably all sorts of other things to touch on, including that open. This was like the second or third attempt of me to actually welcome you to this show. I'm off my game. So apologies in front of this weird, weird episode.
I was going to say you have the vaccine excuse. Not sure what the Canucks excuse have been all season, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, good point. Let's jump into the week that was. I'm thinking back to our last episode. I mean, the Canucks had 2 games to play, did they not? And what games were they the Vancouver Canucks and Calgary Flames essentially were like 2 teams playing as if they had nothing to play for, which was interesting because they didn't.
Yeah, weird that one. I mean, the game at the weekend where Calgary won it in overtime was actually a load of fun to watch and felt like it mattered just for a moment.
the 6-5 final or whatever it was.
Yeah. Even the game the Canucks won.
The 4-2 win?
The 4-2 win. It just felt weird. I mean, Louis Domingue, Baker extraordinaire, Canuck legend, Louis Domingue, played his first game in over a year. So, it just felt weird. And yeah, those last two games just made me sad and deflated.
Yeah.
Or sadder and more deflated.
Yeah, like, you know, first and foremost, we'd sort of chat a little bit about it in our last show, how the Vancouver Canucks would be playing earlier than usual. It's interesting when you have people that saw the start times as sort of early afternoon, genuinely surprised it wasn't like 10 a.m. But again, the NHL had scheduled it in such a way that these games did nothing to interfere in any potential Stanley Cup playoff viewership. But the Louis Domingue start, yeah, first game in a year. I mean, I get it. You're going to rotate sort of players in, you know, to, you know, thank them. It's kind of like, you know, that sort of
thanks for coming.
Like I was going to say, it's kind of like the college football experience where the player who's been with you thick and thin has never seen the actual, you know, field of play during an entire season. Gets brought into like the last home game of the season or whatever, last few games of the season, just to get their name in the record books as officially having played. They get in for like a down in football. So
right. A down. So like that's, yeah, just like a minuscule part of a game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know in real football, you have to play 10 games or in 10 games to win, like to be part of the team officially, like, win a medal, for example. So I know players that are just like just want to play for like 5 minutes of a couple of games just to get their name on the trophy or whatever.
Well, that's the thing though, is in you know what I would call soccer, you get factored into the game through substitution, whether you were on the pitch for 5 seconds when the final whistle blew,
yeah,
or you were on the pitch for 5 minutes, that's a game played. That's a cap. Like there was a young kid earlier this season for the Vancouver Whitecaps who was the final substitution of the game. A second after restart, the referee blew the whistle. So this kid got brought in essentially in the 90th minute, which was like 90 or whatever.
Yeah.
It would have been with stoppage, but that's a start. That's part of one of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever the MLS uses.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because it's a non-stop clock sport, right? So substitutions become tactical for time wasting. So it's a weird thing, but sure, for Louis Domingue's sake, I'm glad he got a start. But
if there is one thing that Louis did, however, do is he prevented Alex Edler from scoring goal number 100, and it was quite apparent and he was trying to get goal number 100. I mean, nothing seemed to go his way, whether it be his stick opportunity or players on his own team. And one might argue the head coach who took him out of the last game of the season didn't even start him. Although, as Alex said, Alex is like, I can't remember how many games he had played over the course of the season after injury, but he's like, I played this many games and I didn't score goal 100. Yeah. So what's one more going to do? But
yeah, it's a strange one. I think the fact that, Louis Domingue didn't get in, they spent the last three games trying to get Edler his 100th goal, that they let the Tanner Pearson go home before the last game of the season, like really just underlined, dotted the I and crossed the T on the fact that it just didn't matter.
Yeah, that last game in Calgary, I genuinely wonder how the players who had to travel for that game felt.
Yeah,
because it's the end of a season where obviously lots of craziness ensued. Travel would have still been through protocol. Having to play this game is through protocol. Like ultimately, once the game was over, and I don't know like timeline if protocol were to then apply as you come home, but you're essentially granted freedom. Like case in point, Petey, he's down in California right now.
Yeah, I'm not sure I 100% understand that.
Well, his agency's down there.
Yeah, but how he can like he the U.S. just doesn't have any quarantine anymore?
Well, no, they do. But see, he like the where this starts to sort of get skewed is he would be he's not a Canadian citizen.
No.
So I don't know if yeah, actually, to be honest, I have no idea. But okay, if Jim Benning can be an essential worker.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to start talking about things I know nothing about. So I'm not trying to rag on Petey. Like, he's putting them all in Instagram. I'm sure it's above board.
Well, even then, the United States. Like, exactly. I don't know. I actually don't know about the state of California if they've completely opened up yet. But many states are like fully open, no restrictions. Like the state of Washington, I think, is going to be opening up pretty soon. Yeah. That's our southern neighbor. So
yeah, I mean, we'll get to the playoffs a little bit later, but it's just been a little strange watching full stands. Hey,
hey. Well, yeah, and we'll probably have to touch on the fact that there is the possibility that there could be fans in a Canadian rink, which is interesting. But back onto the topic at hand. Vancouver Canucks lose that game. It was lackluster, and the Flames seem to play for their awards. Whereas the Vancouver Canucks simply wanted to get through that game as quick as possible so they could get home and do their final, you know, media availability for those that actually had a media availability, pack up their gear and get on their way. Speaking of media availability, Nate Schmidt wasn't there.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know how much to read into all these little pockets of information we're getting, right? And we're just like trying to make and trying not to make him out of a molehill because Nate Schmidt has been a bright spot attitude wise at least. But like it's been a really tough season for Canucks players. I mean, well, is there more to it than that? I don't know.
Well, okay. I mean, in complete transparency, I have contact with a handful of people who I would say are better connected than I am when it comes to sort of the Vancouver Canucks. It's just something I've, you know, been able to pick up over the course of the years. It's completely hearsay. In fact, I don't even know if you consider this hearsay because it's me telling the story of what I've been hearing from those who've been hearing the story from others, like how many, you know, in the telephone game this has gone. But the generally accepted belief is that Nate Schmidt hasn't had the most enjoyable year sort of from the get-go. So like, if we think about this, he was traded to a team that, you know, was probably on a different flight path than the one he was on.
Yeah. Right? Different and trajectory. He didn't feel like he was best treated on the way out. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, and then, you know, comes to Vancouver, and I think if there's one thing we've seen as fans is this is a guy who's a consummate pro, made the best out of the whatever the situation might have been, comes to Vancouver, and then Vancouver had a very, very tough season. And if we were to hear what Trader Jim is telling us, it's either one of we'll be in the playoffs in 2 years' time or playoffs next season. But it's the fire here with Schmidt or the smoke. Let me rephrase that. The smoke indicates to me that there could be fire with the situation. Maybe it's a player that's kind of expressed desire to find somewhere else to go.
Right. And I think there's at least a couple of players who, you know, if there are other opportunities were to present themselves, they would eagerly take them. And you can't really blame a player for that. But honestly, from Nate Schmidt's perspective, if he hasn't been happy and he's still performed every night with a smile on his face, like, I think that shows, like, he's a professional and he's done his job. Yeah. If that's the end of his job at the Canucks, you know, so be it. Like, it's... But it really is telling that it's just like, even if one of these rumors, you know, JT Miller, Nate Schmidt, like, even if there's only a little bit of truth to each rumor, it's worrying that there's a few out there, isn't it?
Yeah, and I mean, JT Miller is an interesting situation because you've got Elliot Friedman who came out to suggest that that's, far from the case. I trust Elliot's take. It sounds like he talked to Miller, if I understand correctly. But it shouldn't be a surprise that the Vancouver Canucks situation isn't one that a player who wants to sort of win tomorrow as keen on. I mean, I am, and I think you, to, without putting words in your mouth, so please correct me if I'm wrong, don't feel this Vancouver Canucks team is a playoff team. They might, in a good season, get close, but yeah. this isn't a team that's a contender. This is not one, to use Jim's words, hey, you just got to get into the playoffs and anything's possible. And that's true. To win the Stanley Cup, you need to be one of 16. But your odds are not equal. Like, there are a variety of factors at play here.
Right. And if we can't get in this season, like, honestly, it wouldn't have been that shot, despite not regarding Canucks as a playoff team, if they'd squeaked in maybe like a couple months ago before COVID. Like, I wouldn't have been that shocked. But that's just an indication of the North Division being incredibly weak. So if they can't make it in the North Division, then they aren't a playoff team at all.
But like, I think you've seen the same sort of reimagined standings if the Vancouver Canucks were a Pacific Division team, if they had gone with the original lineup or original division structure. The Vancouver Canucks are fighting for a playoff spot. And there are those that grasp that, say, oh, the North Division is what did the Canucks no benefit.
I mean, Jim Benning saying that, that's for sure.
Yeah, like I don't believe that's entirely true, because the Vancouver Canucks were finding ways to lose to not good teams. Yeah. Sure, small sample size with the North Division. But if the Vancouver Canucks were finding ways to lose to teams that were not that good, you have to agree that they're probably going to lose a few games and maybe a few more games to teams that are equally not that good in another division. The other thing to consider as well is that if we look at sort of the realigned Pacific Division, sure, maybe it's not as strong or as weak as the North Division would be, but you've, I feel, got better teams.
Yeah.
Playing again.
That's the thing. And but it's also kind of redundant looking at something like that because, okay, are you imagining if they're in the Pacific Division, does that mean COVID doesn't exist? So they're flying without, the mental strain and kind of restrictions of COVID? Or are you saying, because the Pacific Division, although they haven't had, to travel between borders or anything, but they've had to travel with COVID as well. So I don't know what circumstances asking Canucks to play in this fake Pacific Division reality.
In this fake reality, there's actually less travel, because instead of traveling across an entire continent east to west, they only have to travel or south along a coast. I agree with what you're saying. It's we're going to place the team into this vacuum that we've created of our own determination. And therefore, based on that, everything now lines up our way. Yeah, totally. When you dream, you're in control of your own dreams. So keep on dreaming. We'll get into sort of the other news of the week, but I actually wanted to bounce the Canucks award winners your way. So Bo Horvat got MVP.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's wrong, but I completely see why they did that.
Well, it's voted on by the fans. In a way,
yeah, that's the thing. Wrong. It's what does wrong mean in this situation?
Valuable
player statistically to the Canucks? The season is Brock Besser.
I would have said Brock Besser.
Definitely. But, who's held this team together and kept scoring consistently, although not as much as Besser? Bo Horvat. He is probably the most valuable player if you take into account everything, but because you honestly feel like at points it would have collapsed. The whole house of cards would have collapsed if it wasn't for Bo. Even though on the ice, Brock Besser is undeniably the MVP.
Yeah, best defenseman, Quinn Hughes. I it's again fan voted, but who else would that be? Considering how the Vancouver Canucks performed, I think he's really the only and logical choice.
Yeah.
The most exciting player, Nils Höglander, which I actually can align up with. That's fan voting that got that one right. And then Tyler Mott as the unsung hero. And I pause and I ponder this because I don't know of anyone better necessarily, but that's not that I necessarily also agree that Tyler Mott is the unsung. Because, I mean, this is so unsung here. We've talked about this, I think, on the show. But the concept of unsung is the person whose name who is not mentioned much, but it means significant. Tyler Mott sort of fits that. Like, he's not a name that rings from the rafters, unless it's the broadcast, at which point he is the end-all or be-all of any Mott Girl Summer. Mm-hmm. Shout out to the broads.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't know who I pick here. Like, it's such a weird thing because most people aren't given the credit because they're not doing enough. Like, maybe Zach MacEwen. He's kind of quietly done his job, but he hasn't made a huge impact either. I don't have a good answer to that.
I mean, it was a tough season as well. I mean, and that's where you think about, like, you have sort of your few heroes, and then the unsung part. That's I agree. A little more difficult. The one award that Tyler did, however, get that I'm completely on board is the Community Leadership Award or the Daniel Hendrick Sedin Award. Yeah. And if there's one thing that Tyler Mott has really been passionate about is mental health advocacy. And I am this award. I mean, there's obviously some really decent people in the Vancouver Canucks, but Tyler Mott is a really decent guy.
Yeah, totally. His advocacy work is really important. So I completely agree with that one.
And then the two statistical awards, Brock Besser is your leading scorer. And Thatcher Demko is, well, this one is not really statistical, but it is quantitative, most three-star selection.
Right. And yeah, honestly, Thatcher Demko deserves something.
True. True that. Okay. So now that we've got that out of the way, if for some reason you've been hanging out, maybe offline, disconnected from the world and you happen to be a Vancouver Canucks fan, I hate to break it to you, unless you're a big fan of the way this organization has been going, at which point, congratulations. Jim Benning got a stamp of approval from ownership, and he then was empowered to go and bring Travis Green back. Travis is back on a 2-year deal, which I think, if you know, my math adds up, lines them up to the end of Benning's deal. So at least this way you don't have the potential of one twisting in the wind over another.
Anymore.
Sure. But I don't have an issue with Travis Green coming back. I know there are some of our listeners who do, who they're not big Green fans, but I have no problem with Travis Green coming back. In fact, the Vancouver Canucks taking as long as they did to bring Green back makes very little sense to me. I get that there is the possibility that ownership hamstrung Jim Benning's ability to do anything as they conducted whatever the heck the review was and however long it took them to conduct it. But as soon as they've come to the realization that they're not going to move off of Jim Benning, that's when they allow him to go do whatever he needs to do. And hey, he brings Green back. I'm genuinely curious. Why doesn't Travis Green explore potential? Like, word on the street, the Seattle Kraken, if he was not coming back to the Canucks right away, they were picking up the phone and giving him a call. And I can't imagine they would have been the only team not to knock on his door.
Right. And I think Travis would have talked about it. We know his family isn't here. He would have been slightly closer to his family if he went to Seattle. But I do truly believe that, I was going to say Travis loves his job. Maybe that's the wrong way to put it, but I do feel like he has a lot of belief in this group of players. It might not be all of them, but I think there's a lot he's believed in, and he's been and seen through development from his time at Utica through to the Canucks that I think he has a lot of work that he's proud of, and he wants to continue doing that and doesn't want to admit defeat in a way, even though no one would have blamed him. I think he genuinely does want to coach this team and see through this development. I don't know if he's happy about his boss sticking around, apart from the fact that he got the green light to spend some more money.
So, okay, Travis sticking around. Okay, As I say, I have no problem with that. I like him as a coach. The thing about this, though, is if he wasn't happy, why'd he sign? Like, in my mind, he had opportunities with other teams. Now, I get it. There's no guarantee those opportunities actually come to light, and then suddenly you find yourself no longer employed as an NHL coach because you left the Vancouver Canucks, who moved on without you, and who knows who they either promote from within or find out there. But I'm not buying into Jim actually having the ability to spend money. Or let me rephrase that. Maybe he's been given the green light to spend money, but Jim doesn't actually know how to spend money well. So
yeah. Well, the thing is, Travis Green has only signed a 2-year deal, so it's not like he kind of been holding out for term. He was holding
He could have. Well, that's the thing, is whether he was holding out for term or not, the Vancouver Canucks, I don't think, were in a position to offer it to him. Right. I would almost hazard a guess that Jim Benning was at maximum authorized to provide Travis a deal equivalent to his. Because if Jim gets let go by this ownership group, which doesn't seem likely or possible, but if Jim gets let go, the next GM that comes in, we may wish to have flexibility to have their own coach in place. And so if you're ownership, you don't want to have to pay too many people not to work for you.
Yeah, I get that. But the amount of money they've invested in Jim already, it's just the sunk cost fallacy. Like, you're just going to keep sinking more money into Jim for it not to work out, and in the long term not to benefit you, because you're not going to get to the playoffs that way. Yeah. You made a mistake, but correct that mistake. I honestly think that an incoming GM would be fine with Travis. He's one of the most sought-after coaches in the league. Almost was the most sought-after free agent on the league. But I think they've, once again, just gone for the cheapest possible option, which was offer Travis slightly more money and get him to sign for 2 years. And if you're Travis, yeah, maybe you take it and see what you can do, but you've only, like, you're not stuck there for the long term.
Well, again, time will tell. Maybe this team is a lot closer to being a playoff contender than you and I give credit to. Maybe there's something that Travis Green knows more about. Maybe there's something that Jim Benning actually has a level of genius that he's not given enough credit to. And ultimately, all it comes down to is probably that, you know, that desire to continue to practice their craft. But you know who else doesn't quit practicing? The greatest hockey players in the world. They never stop practicing their skills to improve the game, and neither should you. The ICBA trains thousands of workers every year on everything from Excel spreadsheets to excavating trenches. From personal leadership skills to construction estimating, from fall protection to effective management skills, and 500 other courses. Online, on-demand, webinars, and even COVID-safe in-person, ICBA has an option for you and your busy lifestyle. Start climbing the corporate depth chart by sharpening your skills today. Check out icba.ca/courses.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? That because he was mad.
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
How much playoff hockey have you been watching, Arena?
I've been watching a bit. I haven't I don't know if I've watched a full game. I just keep tuning in. You know, I'll be in the middle of something and I'll see a score of a game and go, oh, that looks interesting, and I'll watch a period or two periods. Today, Monday, I've been hopping around, seeing bits and pieces of stuff. But I've seen pretty much all the goals. I usually check out the goals, the highlight packages. But yeah, it's kind of soothing in a way to know that, you know, real skilled fast hockey is still available. Wasn't sure it was after watching the North Division.
Yeah, I'm, well, first of all, sure, real skilled hockey is available, but I can't say I'm that invested in the playoffs. Now, we've talked about this in previous shows over the course of the life of this podcast, but I'm a Canucks fan through and through, and the difficulty I have is I don't have that sort of emotional investment in hockey outside of what I see with the Vancouver Canucks, and exacerbating sort of this season is the fact that it's just been such a rough year that I moved on. I think I moved on before the end of the Vancouver Canucks season. That said, what have I seen? Well, I've seen the St. Louis Blues lose three games late. And I don't say lose late. I mean, I've watched like the last three, 4 minutes. It just seems to be that they would be playing and the Avs will beat them. In fact, eliminate them. I saw that happen.
Yeah. I mean, that's good. The hockey gods do provide it sometimes.
I saw a little bit of the Oilers and Jets clash, or this would have been this weekend.
They're currently playing an elimination game as we record, and Jets are 2-1 up. So, again, the hockey gods may provide it again.
I was of the opinion that, or let me rephrase that. I was told that my opinion should be Connor McDavid was going to eliminate the Jets in three.
Honestly, I saw the Oilers lineup today and I thought the Canucks were thin, and they are, don't get me wrong, but just the Oilers have one line. They literally have, I mean, it's a heck of a line, but it's one line. Zach Cassian is on their second line.
See, this is the thing. I mean, it's been woefully apparent if you're an Oilers fan or if you've sort of been watching the Oilers from the side. To your point, they're all one line. There's a reason why two players on that team are often either in the first, second, or third place of NHL points leaders. It's because they're the only two people that actually get points for the Oilers.
Yeah.
So all you need to do to succeed is to slow those two down and or prevent them from being on the score sheet. And then you've suddenly found yourself playing against a team that is much like the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah. But the Oilers went through second. They didn't scrape into the playoffs. They went through second.
The North Division, what can I tell you?
Yeah, we are just loving on the North Division today. Yeah, I mean, I completely get what you're saying in terms of investment. I'm keeping track of the scores. I'm interested in narratives, but I definitely don't... Like, I obviously am not going to be devastated when a team I vaguely like loses. Like,
yeah.
I like Colorado.
The Avs are such a good team. Like, this is the type of team that I wish the Vancouver Canucks could have been.
Yeah. And I also hate Colorado because, one, they have such a, like, skilled, fast, young team. And two, they're owned by the Kroenkes, who are just evil personified. So, not a big fan of the Avs in some ways, but they're great to watch, has to be said.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Colorado Avalanche, and then you compare sort of the Vancouver Canucks over the rebuild, retool, whatever the heck, re-image years. These were two teams that could have been on very similar, you know, paths. One took one direction, the other took the other, and suffice to say, one's doing just a little, you know, just a tiny bit better than me. Just a tiny bit.
Just a touch.
Very close. Very close. The other thing that I have sort of paid attention to is the fact that officiating in the NHL, it seems to have gotten to Stanley Cup round four playoff level, where the referees simply put their whistle away and let the code deal with it.
Yeah. Although we've already had two, we've had two suspensions.
Okay, so that,
or is that Nazem Kadri, two that I've noticed? Nazem Kadri, Josh Archibald, is that his first name? Plays for the Oilers, just got suspended a game.
There's been some fines.
Yeah.
But the like the Nazem Kadri, I mean, for Kadri does this, it's sort of his thing. He got eight games in the first round. So based on the DOPS math, that is a 16-game suspension in the regular season.
Honestly, like, that's bold, but you do wonder if it's just, yeah, like, Wheel of Justice again, because there's been
It totally is a Wheel of Justice.
Really nasty hits.
The thing... Okay, well, there have been some nasty hits. There's also been, like, when we say nasty, I'm going to use this term, Tavares. Perry, okay. If you look at that, it's a bad hit. It's not Perry.
Yeah, I'm not referring to that. That's a nasty injury. No. Just not a nasty hit.
It's just bad contact. But the result of what took place after that hit, if you needed an example of what is wrong with NHL culture, the code, the guidelines, whatever you want to call it, the fact that the player themselves who went and challenged Perry to a fight said, "It's our captain. We got to go do it."
I know
you did nothing wrong,
but we still got to do it.
I'm sorry.
It's just like, okay, if you wanted an example of why men die earlier, that might be it. Because that's their attitude.
Trust me, Anna, I don't do that type of stuff.
Okay, but good.
The statistics still lead into the fact that, yes, the average lifespan of me is going to be less than you. So I think there's more to it, but you might be raising a fair point of why some contribute to that average. It is completely asinine and making matters worse. And I know there's some of our listeners who don't agree with you and I when we look at this. You have Don Cherry saying it's perfect. To me, Don Cherry is now the barometer. When he says something is good, that it's no longer good. It is like,
oh yeah, of that course. Is
spoiled milk.
But then there's just people who, and I'm not trying to subtweet anyone here because I've seen a few people say it, like people that I genuinely respect and often agree with their opinion and usually quite progressive will say stuff, oh yeah, but like that was their captain, I'll give them a pass. And it's like, no, that's exactly why you don't give them a pass, because there was no reason to do it. Like, it's just because it has to be done. That's the only reason, because... It is that way because the code, because it has to be done.
Yeah. And that's it. Like you look at that in real time. Perry realized what was happening after it happened. Like when we hear about the bang, bang play, that was it. And you can actually see in slow-mo the moment Perry has realized what's happening and where Tavares's head is. He is trying everything to pull his leg up. He Supermans, like, you can tell Perry realizes he's going to go and hit him in a bad way. And, you know, unfortunately, there was nothing that Perry could do yet somehow, because, you know, it's who he hit that he has to go and pay the price. I'm sorry. So you're telling me that through no fault of his own, through nothing more than being in the wrong place, that he has to pay a price. If that's the case, next time someone, you know, loses a blade and, like, you know, bails on the ice, I expect that someone come over, especially if it's the captain, someone come over the boards, skate down to behind, like, the one goal there and challenge the ice crew to a fight. Yeah. Right? Because that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Next time a player gets rubbed out on the boards and catches the stanchion, I hope they go and get to the glass crew and challenge them to a fight.
I thought you were going to say they challenge Wyatt to a fight on Twitter.
Yeah, I hope that, you know what, Wyatt, I know you're a listener. You better watch out, because the code says next time the stanchion rubs, you know, causes an injury, or the puck, if the puck
not
takes
all
a weird bounce and clips someone.
It's not all the heroism of the Bieksa goal. You got to take the rough with the smooth.
Yeah, this is just crazy. It's asinine. It is nuts. Like, this is... The sad part about this is here is an example of how, like, I saw so many people like, what the hell? Why is there a fight? This is garbage. Like, people who would have probably been somewhat supportive of the quote unquote code actually saying, nah, man, this is a waste of space. And guess what? That none of that matters in the situation. It's just going to be swept under the rug. Water under the is just, we move on. And that's sad.
Yeah. But I agree that it was completely accidental and, you know, not intentional at all. But it will definitely feed into the idea that because the NHL is so bad at protecting its stars, players are already coming from that standpoint of not feeling safe.
Yeah.
So they're almost ready to... you know, jump and protect themselves and their teammates because it doesn't feel like the game does that enough.
Well, you're right. And actually, you know what? The issue is more than just that result. You're right. It's the fact that the league does not protect its players. The EPA does not protect its players. If any one of you listens and disagrees with us because we've never played the game, I don't care.
Yeah.
It's clear to me. Neither of those, like, they have different interests.
Do you see that table that was penalties drawn per 60?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so it was basically the NHL's top scorers down one side, and then the last column was penalties drawn per 60, and it was just so low. Because they're not getting protected. The NHL just has no idea what its best product is. Sometimes it thinks it's fighting and chaos because that gets it clicks. But those fans are not buying season tickets. They're not coming back next year and like buying a hockey package on their cable. Those guys will like watch a couple videos on generic sports website and say hockey is crazy, and they don't come back.
The thing about this, and I often actually will see people who will look at this and they'll tell, like, there are those that will tell you, oh, those are players that are just, they're just trying to draw penalties. They're not actually getting calls because there's no calls to be had, which is BS. But they'll then make the comparison to soccer. Oh, look at soccer. They just dive. They dive all the time. You know what? Yeah, I actually agree when it comes to watching soccer. There's a lot of gamesmanship taking place when a player feels contact in a certain position. I refereed, not at the professional level, but I refereed youth and adult to play here in BC. I officiated provincial championships, and it's a tough job where players who are trying to use the rules to protect them to their advantage. But I would much rather that be the issue. Because what you're doing is you're swinging to empower skilled play over eliminating that from the game whatsoever. And that's where I think hockey has reached. Like, I'd much rather, you know, it be a problem that you've over officiated because you can fix that.
Yeah.
To under officiate.
Yeah.
That's when the code comes into play.
Yeah. And that's where you get serious injuries and honestly bad hockey.
And unfortunately, there are far too many people out there who would tell you, but Anna, that's not bad hockey. I love fights. I love the hitting. I don't want it to be taken out of the game. I don't think you and I are saying let's take hits out of the game or take contact out of the game. We're not at all. It's just play within the boundaries and the rules of the game. Cary Fraser's autobiography, it's a good read. And it's interesting how he talked about sort of how his game management style was applied to officiating. And there you like, he even talks about, I told this player, I saw this and this is what, don't do that again. And he talked about, oh, these players respected me. The thing about that is that here was a good example of players who might have been trying to draw a penalty and he would tell them, no, I got you. Well, if that's the case, if that was truly the problem, why not have more of that? Like, have that opportunity. Instead, the reverse is just don't call. Hmm. Like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying Carey Fraser's right, but I just feel that much more needs to happen in the NHL.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anywho, obviously in a week's time or 2 weeks time or whatever the heck it is that we record, because we'll talk about this at the end of the show. We're getting into the off season and our schedule will start to adjust. Who knows what more will have happened in the NHL postseason. But we'll take ourselves a short break. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a f***ing explanation about it. I can't.
You f*** out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
I'm writing to thank you for your support during what has been an incredibly strange, difficult year for everyone, and to explain why I'm confident you'll see a much better Canucks team next season and beyond. What the actual F, Francesco?
I mean, like, his sense of timing is just always spot on, and he always comes across as sincere.
Some history here. When I saw this come out, I had to read it a few times and look at the account that was tweeting this letter to season ticket holders, because there ain't no way I wanted to get boothed. And Booth, I gotta genuinely ask you, Anna, how has Booth's account not yet been suspended?
I genuinely don't know, but
I'm not suggesting that has to happen. It's just that the way,
and it's funny,
you're not allowed to impersonate and whatnot, but boy, he does it well.
Yeah. Because the thing is, what I enjoy,
she, I don't know, they,
I had, yeah. What I enjoy about Mr. Booth is, it's only people outside the market that don't get it. Like, we've all been Booth, don't get me wrong, but we get the idea of Mr. Booth. When it's a joke and it's humor, it's the idea isn't to convince people. I think it's more just what they're saying by, you know, posing something as Francesco. It's just like, oh, we believed it because that's how ridiculous Francesco is, or similar. Like, there's a point to it, and I hate those people that are trying to fool people with fake trades and stuff just to get clicks, but that's not the point of Mr. Booth. It's the point is humor. Because you got to laugh in these situations, because otherwise you cry.
Yeah, but the funny thing about the Booth letter and the actual Francesco letter is Booth said many of the same things Francesco did. I mean, outside of the fact we've let Jim go. But the problem with Francesco's letter here is it comes across as, in my mind, completely misreading the room. Like, he talks about, you know, being disappointed in a 2021 season, which I don't think, I mean, it would be actually shocking if he and the family and ownership or whomever wasn't. But then to start to go and discount it, oh, many factors were beyond our control. You know, how many times have we seen in the past, how many ever seasons, injuries. Like, there's always an excuse. The factors beyond our control, the schedule, now it's the pandemic.
The cap, the fact we're playing in the North Division.
Yeah, like it's like, oh, here are all these excuses, and how, you know, he's going to, as ownership, going to provide Jim and his management team the full resources to take the Canucks to the next level. That scares the living daylights out of me. Like, this is so, why? I'm not actually against ownership loosening the purse strings. Like, if they've gone and tightened the purse strings on Jim, that might have created some of the problem. But I think I've said it quite clearly. I don't see Jim as the guy to get the Canucks out of this mess. And the scarier part is you've given the guy the opportunity to find a way to get this team to the playoffs quick. Like, I'm half expecting some craziness to take place this offseason that doesn't work out well for the Vancouver Canucks long term.
Yeah, I think that's the terrifying part. It's just like, almost the worst case scenario was always going to be Jim staying over Jim leaving. But, like, honestly, it would be a better case scenario if they were like, you know, Jim vote of confidence in Jim. He has time to retool and rebuild. I'm like, at least that might have been a more sensible approach. Not guaranteed, of course, but because Jim Benning. But the fact that they think we're just like half a step away from being competitive, that truly scares me.
Yeah. It's surreal. And I guess I have to consider, like, what else was he going to say? Right? Like, this is an ownership group that had allowed essentially Travis Green address the situation with Jake Vertanen. And we didn't even talk about this episode. I mean, that's its own WTF moment. Jim Benning referring to the situation and completely discounting not only the situation, but the victim.
Yeah.
Who was involved. Like,
but
that's
it's just the
that's its own episode.
Yeah, completely. I mean, the fact Travis Green shouldn't have had to talk about it. Jim Benning even like does not have the competence to talk about it because he doesn't have the PR skills or the legal mm-hmm. know-how. So just completely the wrong person to talk about it.
You could have Chris Geer.
Chris Geer would have done a better job because at least he would have known the legal ins and outs of the situation. I don't even know. I've read interviews with Chris Geer, but I don't know how his PR.
No, but like he's a lawyer, is he not?
Yeah, exactly. Very good.
Like I feel
by all accounts.
Like I mean, we're getting a little off track on what we were getting to in the F word here, but in that particular situation, the Vancouver Canucks could have taken a very sterile route. Right? We're taking the allegation seriously. We're performing an investigation, and that's all we have to say on that. When this question came up, and props to PJ for getting in front of the presser. I mean, if Jim Benning had been provided sort of any form of PR training or a notepad or whatever the heck with words, it could have been the investigation is ongoing. We've taken these allegations seriously, and that's all we have to say about that. And I feel it's sterile. It's not. There's better ways to, but you know what? I can't fault an organization for speaking legalese.
Yeah. And the fact that media and fans weren't even clear if once the police investigation started, whether the independent investigation was still ongoing, like mm-hmm. that's bad. That's a bad look. At least just put all the sterile facts of the case and then say nothing more. That's fine. Yeah. At least everyone would have all the information.
It's just, I mean, but this is just another example of a management operation that had like there are so many different little fires. There's so many gears that have completely rusted. Like, it's not a well-run organization. And then going on in this letter, this sort of final statement. If there's one positive in this letter, please get vaccinated soon. Please get vaccinated as soon as you can so that we can be together again at Rogers Arena in the fall. So the please get vaccinated as soon as you can, period. That's a real good statement. But he didn't put a period there. He said, so that we can get together at the Rogers Arena in the fall. One thing we learned this year is how much our players rely on your enthusiasm. If your ranks are not the same. Oh boy, Frankie, you are thankful Vancouver Canucks fans were not in that barn.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, you should be thankful that there is a couple of months that will allow for the fan base to maybe simmer down a little bit. But I think there needs to be a reckoning to truly understand that even if you were to go and discount the small number of fans that showed up to protest at Rogers Arena, you had a small number of fans willing in a pandemic to socially distance and come down and express their opinion outside of the rink because they feel that they're flying banners.
Yeah.
Like these are things that are happening because there is enough passion right now. If there is a positive take from this is you haven't actually gone and, you know, completely extinguished the passion of fans in Vancouver. Love me or hate me, just know of me is probably what's important. But by goodness, I don't think you understand what's going to happen. Like, it's not going to take a whole lot of time before things go, if they go askew, for people in that barn.
Yeah.
To let you know all about it.
Oh, yeah. I think it could very quickly go off the rails once fans allowed back in the arena. And what I'm worried about is, are they thinking, okay, but we've got a summer to make some move to try and encourage the fan base that we're going somewhere?
I genuinely don't know how. Like, if they think that, oh, we're going to trot out deals to Petey and Quinn, and we're going to celebrate those and people will rally around that. No, man. People expect you to have Petey and Quinn in the lineup.
That's it.
So there's the you don't get. Yeah, you don't get like the attaboys for getting those deals done. Really, expectation is Petey and Quinn come back, but there is a good segment of people who worry, is there a scenario in which one of them does not, through a variety of ways? How many people are talking about the potential of an offer sheet for Petey? I don't think offer sheets will be thrown that way, but because in the NHL, no team wishes to use one because the code says you don't. But could Jim go and trade one of them?
I mean, I don't think he's that dumb. They're going to...
Oh, you give him a lot more credit than I do.
I just think what they're going to do is sign them both to bridge deals because... And just keep the problem down the road to the next GM.
So is Petey and Quinn.
Yeah. It's the next GM's problem.
God, it's just such... I genuinely hate how we've sort of become dark.
Yeah.
It's difficult. And I understand that there are those out there that do try to see the positive, and I applaud you. It's just,
and
like, what are the positives? There's a good young core. That's a positive. The problem is that I've seen the good young core of other teams get, you know, as much juice possible squeezed with everything around them. And that's not been happening.
Yeah. And the thing is, there are exciting moments, players, games, just it's the whole structure that worries us. But as you say, like, you know, Botch says, like, I can't wait for it to go the other way. Like, we're the exact same. We want to be this promising team. We don't revel in being bitter and dark. We, like, as soon as there's some kind of encouraging direction, we will be so happy for that, and we will trumpet that, we will champion that, but mm-hmm. at the moment we don't see it.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually listening to our sort of episodes, the start of this sort of truncated season.
No.
The three of us, you, Matt, and I, had the team in a, I think we were maybe a little higher than ultimately the result of the season panned out, but none of us were confident that this team had what it took to compete within the North Division.
Yeah. I think I either predicted them fourth or fifth. So yeah, I definitely saw them.
I mean, ultimately none of us had them finishing as low as they did.
Yeah.
The three of us collectively had them as being 4 or 5.
Right.
I think I was the most down on the team, but that was just because I struggled because I had us fighting against the Calgary and Edmonton. And I got one of the two teams right. Problem is, one of those teams also is in a bad way. But here we are now.
Yeah, I mean,
how is this any different? How is it that we as of now look at next season with oh yeah, we saw some positives, we saw some good things. No, man, it was a tire fire every which way we could go. And it's going to require a crazy off season, I think, to re-inspire us. But I will give your theory credit. We want to rally behind this team.
Mm-hmm. Cuz I do think people will say, "Oh, like the COVID situation that really took the wind out of Canucks sails." And I think people are right, but all it did was just like, only because I think they are currently a better team, like on the ice, than the Ottawa Senators marginally.
Yeah.
I think the Ottawa Senators organization is making way better moves than the Canucks are in terms of building for that future. But yeah, I think it did put the final sucker punch to the Canucks season, maybe, but the Canucks were not heading anywhere fast prior to that outbreak.
I'm just reading some of the replies to Francesco's letter. Uh-huh. One of them comes from Cody Severtson. If you might remember, Lachlan, who joined us a couple episodes, talked about how he and Cody have a podcast. the Greasecast. Well, Cody's reply to his, Franklin, I've spent the better part of the season trying to put together a mean chicken parm for my family. I never got it right. At some point, I had to reflect and realize it wasn't COVID's fault that the parm sucked, but it was mine for buying all the wrong ingredients. Someone else replies to this. Nah, man, you just paid $20 for your bag of breadcrumbs when you could have walked next door and borrowed a cup from your neighbors. Now you can barely afford those organic chicken breasts. Of course you're going to have trouble assembling a good chicken parm. Like, this is the type of discourse that Canucks Twitter needs more of.
Yeah.
The food analogies to how this organization is run.
I enjoy it. I mean, we've got to find levity somewhere.
Yeah. Well, speaking of you know, putting the ingredients together to produce content, or at least organizationally, our show is going to be transitioning into our off season, which is unlike, you know, as I said, years ago, where we would just take the season off. Like, you'd see us show up at like the draft deadline, free agent frenzy, like all the special dates. No, we're still going to be around. It's just, we're going to go and transition into our every 2 week schedule. So what does that mean? Well, instead of finding us each and every week on a Tuesday, you'll find us now each or every second week on Tuesday, unless some craziness ensues.
Yeah.
That needs to bring Anne and I together to record a sort of a special episode. If you happen to be a patron of the show, listening in and above, which is $5 Canadian a month, you actually will get access to OTR Off the Rails, which you always have had. But our recording schedule will allow for you to get content from you, us, Anna and I was going to say you and I, but to our listeners, you is Anna, each and every week, weekly. So it doesn't really change for you. I get that it's maybe a little bit less than y'all want, but.
And it's a little different.
It's the off season.
But I think you'll appreciate the hockey break in between.
Our show will also transition a little bit. It'll become a little more OTR. So for those of you who joined us this season, who may not have gone back into our back catalog, when the off season rolls around, we tend to have a little more fun. And not that you and I don't have fun, Anna. We have lots of fun. But we are going to go and probably talk about different things other than the Vancouver Canucks, other than just the NHL. We'll get different guests and different voices to join us.
Yeah.
We're just going to have a good time. And we've got some things in the works, little
irons in the little fire.
Things here and there. Not only to get some pretty cool people to join us in the near future, but then to kick off the start of our next podcast season. So this will happen. I'm going to presume NHL resumes into sort of what it would normal schedule would become September. So stay tuned. Lots of cool things. I mean, this is the longest running Vancouver Canucks podcast. I've been doing this now for, I don't know how long. And I've been taking, like, I've self acclaimed myself to be like some leader of Canucks Twitter just because I can.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, Anna, you've tapped in, was it 2 years ago now? 3 years ago?
I think
full-time?
Three full seasons. It's been three full seasons, at least.
But yeah, it's the Chris and Anna show, and we're going to kick things up a notch next year. I just don't want to, you know, break the news yet, because you got to build into it, right?
Yeah.
As good shows do. Speaking of building into things, you'll notice that we've started to tweet out some stuff like, hey, give us a review. And a friend of the show, Lisa, she actually retweeted her review from a year ago and just re-upped the offer that Anna and I can go down and grab a beer and watch a Kraken game.
Yeah. And I can't wait.
We'll take her up on that offer.
C4 on the road is going to happen for sure, but when and how, we wait to find out.
You know, I think we should do something up where we actually even record a podcast.
Yeah.
Down in Seattle.
Yeah, we should.
Right. Like I could, you know, I got the gear. I can make it portable. We can make this work. I don't know. Again, the borders when they open in 2037 or whatever it is.
Exactly.
That's our limiting factor, but yeah, no, we'll have to make that happen. We got obviously new friends of the show down there, with our Sound of Hockey friends.
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, maybe get them in on the action.
Yeah. Biggest rival.
But yeah. But we did actually get a review in recently. And as is our promise, if you leave us a review, wherever it happens to be, and I somehow find it, that's actually something I've been struggling to do, is find all the reviews of us. But if I find it, I will read it on air. And so we got a 5-star review from friend of the show, Rich. He left it on Podchaser. His words were, the first Canucks podcast I ever listened to, and I haven't found a reason to check out any other ones. Chris and Anna always do a great job. Thank you, Rich. I actually encourage our listeners to check out the podcasts. You'll find some that you like, some that you don't. And that's okay. There's lots of voices out there, but as much as C4 is the best and we always will be the best mediocre Canucks podcast,
obviously,
there's some good mediocre ones too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have like Friends of the Show, Broadcast, Friends of the Show, Parks on Net, Friends of the Show, Creasecast.
Trust the Process, Creasecast. I mean, and we're listing off here. There's, you know, Point Shot. I mean, there's so many out there. Canucks Conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Personally, Canucks Conversation has reached the level they don't need us to give them shout outs anymore. They should be giving us shout outs. I
actually did listen to their show yesterday, and they did.
What did they? They gave us a shout out?
Well, they were talking, they were throwing shade at Parks on Net because we had Chris on and Quads on way before Parks on Net deigned to give Chris a guest spot. So
that's because we're the best mediocre. Oh man. So I think I've made it very clear. I have too many podcasts in my rotation for the non-commute I have, and that's where I listen to them. So I just Canucks Conversation is one I listen to periodically. I actually listened to the Broads just this past week. They're still in my rotation.
Yeah.
Too much F1 for me though, because that's when they lose me. I just don't get the whole racing thing, driving cars. I'm not knocking those who enjoy it. I just can't. And it's all racing. It's not just F1, Indy, NASCAR.
Yeah, I completely agree. And also when Georgia and Mal, and they know this, have terrible takes about Arsenal kit.
I saw that on Twitter.
It's fine. They're just wrong.
Take them to task. Take them to task. Oh, speaking of Pawn, I want to give them a shout out. Pucks on Net had their 300th episode. They are the second longest Canucks running podcast out there. So give them their due. And for those who then might start paying attention, well, wait a minute. C4 has not yet had 300 episodes. That's true. However, Pawn never took off seasons off.
Right.
C4 did. So they could, if they were to go and claim the longest number or whatever, they can do all that. But we started at the end of June. They started in, like, I think it was September.
It's all about the technicalities, right?
That's right. And again, I'm in charge. We've already established Chris is in charge. So I set all the rules. Oh man, Anna, this is actually a longer episode than I thought it would
be. Yeah, we did go off the rails once, twice, thrice at least, but you know.
But
we had a good time.
Right. And I just want to say I enjoyed this season with you. I know it was a crazy one. If you were to go back at the start of the season and tell me it would just finish with only you and I on the show again, I would have actually said what? If you were to have suggested that I might have been not the person here, I might have said, yeah, sure, I'm getting busy. But no, I'm so glad it's you and I that are still here, keeping the lights on, recording each and every week and soon to be every second week for all of our listeners. It's been a fun ride.
Yeah. And we're half vaccinated now, so better, faster, stronger as we go into the off season.
That's right. And soon, maybe you and I can get together on a socially distant patio and raise a pint, right? Maybe we might even get to that point where we can have a few of our listeners come out to a socially distant patio to raise a pint. Maybe on like a different patio, because I don't know how the rules will be. But we can all, like, we'll find that patio. We'll be across the street raising pints over the, you know.
Yeah.
Across like Granville Street downtown or something.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah. But what final words of wisdom do you have for all of our listeners?
It's been a really tough season, you guys. So well done for sticking it out. If you watched all 56 of Canucks games. I mean, one, do we need to perform a wellness check? But also, well done you, but we made it. And Jim is still there, but Travis Green's going to be back. So who knows? Maybe things will get better. So confident.
So I was going to say, you're so, so positive there, Anna. That was just like, I mean, I don't know how to handle that.
Hashtag that's betting so bro.
Well, okay, that sort of ties into what my final words are going to be, and it's actually already been shared on Twitter, but I'm going to share it here on the show. As a host of the longest running Canucks podcast and self-professed OG of Canucks Twitter, the final determination of which fan opinion being right rests with me. After long and thoughtful consideration, here is my ruling. Right is relative, and your opinion is yours. And having already established the you're a fan if you're a fan precedent, this ruling has found that your opinion and opinions on how the team functions are entirely yours to have. Like, dislike, love, hate, support, or not, all are decisions that are made by you and you alone. And for the record, I want a front office change in Vancouver. No, I do not believe Jim is the guy who leads the Canucks to the Cup. Yes, I will remain a fan of the Canucks regardless, and whether you agree or disagree with any of those points, we can all still be fans.
That was quite smart.
Gatekeeping sucks.
That was smart. And so. Measured. But just to provide balance to your balance, if you ever talk smack about the team, you're not a real fan.
Oh!
And that's coming from me, who is also not a real fan.
Oh, man, that should be our hashtag. Best mediocre, longest running, best mediocre, hashtag not real fans.
Hashtag not a real podcast either.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of Anna at A4Site03, through myself, Chris at Light Forest, you can find the C4 Podcast on every podcast app out there. You can find us at c4podcast.com, CanucksHockeyBlog.com, and the full press coverage network. By the way, we're out.